Speed skater and Champaign native Jonathan Cook finished more than 10 seconds off his trial time and in 19th place overall in last Saturday's 5,000-meter race at the Winter Olympics in Sochi. Cook will be competing in two more events at the Olympics, the 15,000-meter race and the team pursuit, in which he won a silver medal 4 years ago. I'm Jim Meadows, and while Jonathan Cook stays busy at the Olympics, we'll be hearing from three former Olympic skaters from Central Illinois, Matt Savoy, Kathy Reuter, and five-time medalist Bonnie Blair. You'll be hearing about their triumphs and challenges, and even a little about Jonathan Cook, today on Focus. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. If you look at the Central Illinoisans who have competed in the Olympic Games of recent years, you'll find nearly all of them have done it wearing ice skates. The latest is Urbana native Jonathan Cook. He's competing in the Sochi Winter Olympics in three speed skating events. Today on Focus, we'll hear from some former Olympians with roots in Central Illinois. Champaign native Kathryn Reuter, also a speed skater, took silver and bronze in the 2010 Winter Games in Vancouver. Peoria native Matt Savoy competed in Turin, Italy in 2006 in men's figure skating. But first, we'll meet speed skater Bonnie Blair, who grew up in Champaign and made history by becoming the first female American athlete to win 5 Olympic gold medals. Blair retired from competition in 1995, but she's representing the United States as a delegate at the current Winter Olympics in Sochi. She talked with Illinois Public Media's Scott Cameron shortly before she left the States for the Olympic Village.
You're representing the United States in Sochi as a delegate. What's your role as part of that delegation?
Well, I'm actually going to be doing that at the closing part of the Olympics for the closing ceremony. So we'll kind of go to a couple other events. Gold medal hockey is one that I'm kind of excited to go to because, of course, I love the hockey. And then you go to closing ceremonies, and it's myself, Eric Heiden, who obviously another speed skater, mm-hmm. if people are familiar with him. And then there's Caitlin Cowhow, which is she's a hockey player, female hockey player that's retired. And then there's the Secretary of State will be with us, as well as the ambassador to Russia from the United States. So we have what's called a delegation, and we basically represent the president here because he's not able to attend. And so, yeah, we're there to, you know, I feel in a different kind of a category to represent our country and really cheer on Team USA.
Mm-hmm. And do you and Eric still find ways to be competitive with each other?
Well, as a matter of fact, Eric and I competed together at the Olympic trials in 1980, but that was the only other competition that we were ever in at the same time, because once 80 was over, he retired, and that's kind of when I started getting into things. But, mm-hmm. You know, a great person, a great doctor. He's traveled with our speed skaters in the past as a team physician. So, you know, he's also given back to our sport, you know, in various different ways.
Yeah. Now, have you been asked to serve as a delegate to the U.S. For the Olympics before?
Yes, I actually got to do it in for the Vancouver Games, also for closing ceremonies, and it was just a really neat opportunity, and you know, kind of cool because you like go in motorcades and they stop the traffic, so yeah, it kind of makes havoc for everybody else, but you know, on somebody on the inside that doesn't get to do something like that very much, it's kind of mm-hmm. cool.
Even better than being on a Wheaties box, maybe.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
You mentioned getting to see, you know, the hockey and some of these other events. Do you get to interact much with the U.S. speed skaters who are out there?
Usually, if so, they actually have, which is different than when I was at the Olympic Games. It's called USA House. And so it's a place where the athletes can go and kind of relax, and they have, usually lunch and dinner, and some various sponsors kind of do some things at that point in time too. But if so, that's where I would see them. But, you know, for the most part, I don't usually see them till after they're done because, you know, they're pretty focused on what they need to do mm-hmm. and the things that they need to take care of to get ready and prepare for their races.
Okay. Who are you rooting for?
Well, obviously, Jonathan Cuck from Champaign there would be very exciting to see him do well again as he did in the Vancouver Games. He'll be competing in the 1,500, the 5,000 meters, and as well as the team pursuit, which I think our guys in the team pursuit really have a great shot of winning a medal there. One thing that could happen that hasn't happened, I believe, since 1968, and I keep meaning to look it up and I keep forgetting about it, but Heather Richardson and Brittany Bowe, both from U.S. speed skating, in the 1,000 and the 1,500, both have a shot at being on the medal stand. And I don't think two American females have been on the medal stand since 1968. So that would be really cool. So I'm definitely pulling for them and wishing them really good luck.
Now, your record in terms of most medals won in Winter Games stood for a long time. And then Anton Apollo Ono broke that in 2010. Does anybody have a chance at passing that record in Sochi?
Boy, I don't know. Shawnee Davis could maybe, I don't know, maybe tie with maybe some medals. But, you know, I think he's got four already. So he could, you know, he's in three events. I guess he could overtake me and go to seven medals. So, yeah, I think Shawnee. Now, anybody else in some of the other sports, it's hard to pick. But, you know, the ones that really have sometimes more of a shot are the short trackers just because they have an opportunity to be in a few more events mm-hmm. and a relay. And now that's kind of come about a little bit more with long track adding the team pursuit in there.
You know, these games are interesting too. Politics is playing a slightly bigger role around these games, at least, than in recent years, you know, with Russia's recently implemented anti-gay laws. The U.S. delegation that you're a part of includes a number of former athletes who are openly gay and have been for a long time. Are you seeing this? Are you making a statement as part of this delegation?
Yeah, no, I'm not. You know, I really wasn't aware of all the political stuff behind the scenes until I saw the delegations and the people that were announced to represent the president. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's, you know, for sure not, or at least to my knowledge, not why I was picked or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, you know, winter sports has usually been pretty good where a lot of the politics and stuff have kind of stayed out of it. But this time it seems like it's kind of drawn some things up. And, you know, I think for the most part, you know, I hope people realize that what's about to happen over the next couple of weeks is all about athleticism and athletes trying to go and do their best and represent their country and trying to keep peace around the world. So I'll keep my fingers crossed that that's what happens.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me wonder, do you think, is there any legitimate role for political issues, human rights issues, whatever it might be, to come out during the Olympics?
You know, I'm really not sure. You know, I'm sure that that could happen, but that's not my avenue of going over to the Olympics. I'm going there to cheer on the team.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, the games are always set up as no matter what was happening around the world, the games are the one place to go that were separate.
Yeah, correct. Exactly.
Okay. You know, we've also, I want to talk about some of the fun stuff too here, but we've also heard a good deal about terrorist threats to these games. I mean, does that worry you at all?
You know, unfortunately, at this day and age of our world around us, you know, you never know what's going to happen, like, down the street. And, you know, anytime, like, something comes over the TV, like breaking news or whatever, and you're like, oh, no, now what's happened? And, you know, I think, as with anything, I kind of go into wherever I'm going with my eyes open and making sure I'm aware of my surroundings, and I'll do the same when I'm over there. From everything I've heard, they've, you know, almost got an endless amount of security and money that they have spent on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think that they want anything to happen over there. You know, I think they're going to be proud to put these Olympics on and want to see things go without a hitch. So I think they're going to do everything in their power to make sure that that happens.
Yeah. You've been to, I mean, any number of Olympic Games now as an athlete, as the ambassadorial kind of role. Has your planning changed or any of the instructions that you've been given for these games been different because of these threats?
No, not really. Okay. It's going to be warmer over there than your typical winter Olympics.
Oh, that's...
So I won't have to take a big coat. I think that's probably like the one of the things. But, you know, no, I think, you know, just with anything, when you go to something that is that large, just need to, you know, go in it with your eyes wide open and making sure, you know, you kind of got one eye going forward and one eye going back.
Yeah. You know, later in the show, we are going to hear from Catherine Reiter, also a speed skater from Champaign.
Yeah.
She told my colleague Jeff Bossert here that your influence on her career was huge. You know, you serve as a role model for a lot of people, including, frankly, my younger sister, who got into speed skating after watching you in the Olympic Games. What has it meant for you to be a role model?
It's definitely an honor. And, you know, also, to a certain extent, something that I don't take lightly, but I also feel in another sense that, you know, my parents brought me up in a good way. I had a lot of role models ahead of me that I looked up to. They're in Champaign on a local level and, you know, on a national level. And, you know, you just hope that type of evolution keeps happening. And I'm sure there's a lot of girls that, you know, now have looked up to Catherine, and now she's kind of in that position that maybe I was in. So, you know, you hope that it's something that keeps revolving. And, you know, I'm glad that I was able to fulfill that role and do it with, you know, what I hope is grace and dignity and goodwill and, you know, you knock on wood that you hope you don't screw up even later in life.
It can be unforgiving at times to be in that spotlight, I guess.
Yes.
Oh, you mentioned, you know, Catherine, we've talked about Jonathan, both speed skaters from Champaign in addition to yourself. Is there something in the water around here with all the success in speed skating?
Definitely got to wonder. And, you know, I think you just even look at a whole at speed skating in general. We don't have the numbers that, let's say, football does or baseball does or soccer does. And when you look at how successful our sport has been at the Winter Olympic Games, it really, truly is amazing. So, you know, I think we've been very lucky within the sport to get a good core group of athletes, you know, that keep, you know, coming in. But I'd still like to see those numbers get bigger. I'd still like to see us have a lot more numbers to choose from because, you know, with what numbers we've had to choose from, which aren't very many, we've been very successful. So if we had, you know, double that, could we have double the success? Hmm. You know, could we get three on the podium at the same time? I mean, that would be really cool. So, you know, I just, and definitely in different areas you see the sport has kind of dwindled, but you always hope for a revival, especially during the Olympics. So over these next couple of weeks, we hope we spark some more kids' interest, and that lights the fire under some of them and gets them thinking about the next games in 2018.
This is a relatively small community here in Central Illinois, and there's you, Catherine, Jonathan, all made it big. Do you have did that create a unique relationship for the three of you? Is there a bond there?
Well, I think to a certain extent, although, you know, because they're kind of after me, I really didn't get to interact with them a ton. You know, we did do a champagne pitcher, what I call, at the Vancouver Games at what was USA House up there. And, you know, the three of us were together and they had their medals. And, you know, I was very proud. You know, how cool that our hometown of Champaign has produced, you know, Olympians, not just Olympians, but medalists, you know, in a relatively short period of time. So, you know, very proud of what they've done. You know, like I said, I don't know them a ton, but I definitely respect everything that they've done. And, you know, Jonathan, what he's about to embark on over these next couple of weeks. And now Catherine, kind of taking on a role of being a coach, just another stepping stone of staying involved in the sport and trying to give back.
Yeah. Now, Jonathan, so he will be competing here in Sochi. Do you have any sense, I mean, can you get a preview? Do you have any sense of his strengths or weaknesses or what people might want to watch for as he hits the ice?
Well, I think Jonathan's one of those guys that floats under the radar. But I think sometimes that can be to, you know, a positive for him. And he's a very hard worker. He trains like an animal. You know, and through a lot of this, he's gone to school in Champaign, but yet he skates in Milwaukee. There's not a lot of people that can do what he's done. And, you know, I really look to him as the 5,000 being his stronger race versus the 1,500. But then when we take it to the team pursuit, him and his teammates definitely have a great shot at winning a medal there. So he's definitely got an exciting couple of weeks coming up.
So part of the reason you said you're going to Sochi is part of your work with CRS, Catholic Relief Services. What's your involvement with that organization?
Yeah, I probably just, you know, it's been a little over a year ago. I was approached about helping the charity CRS, Catholic Relief Services. And once I got to learn a little bit more about the organization, I really loved what they stood for. You know, having me traveled around the world, I've seen, you know, good, bad, and indifferent. And, you know, I've done a lot of charity work here locally with some various causes. But this was one that was more worldwide. And I thought, you know, if you can do something that can kind of touch the world, how cool is that? And so what CRS is really all about, they actually were founded back in the 1940s, and they're more about self-sustaining projects. So, for instance, kind of during the Olympic Games, they're going to be trying to raise $50,000, so $10,000 for every Olympic gold medal that I won.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea is to raise money to build and create running water for a lot of people. So, for instance, it would affect 10,000 people to have safe household water to drink, and probably close to 17,000 school children that they'd be able to get new latrines. So, you know, it's just a really neat cause, and something, like I said, where you can really touch the world with it. And so during the games, that's going to be one of the fundraisers they're doing. And you can learn more about it by going to CRSWI, for Wisconsin, where I live, .org.
I was also curious. So you won, what, 5 gold medals?
Correct.
And 1 bronze?
Correct.
Where are they?
They're in what is called what I call an Olympic coffee table. And a friend of ours from the sport of speed skating created me a coffee table that sits in our great room in the shape of Olympic rings.
Wow, what a neat thing.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So how do you take care of those for long term?
They just stay in the table.
So they're, I mean, are they like actually sealed inside?
No, I can get into them, but, you know, it's a pretty thick piece of glass on top where you've got to try to get, you know, try to move it to get to them. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool.
Okay, that really is neat. And so you don't have to worry about shining them or anything. They just stay in there.
In fact, the one from Calgary, I've taken it out so many times and utilized it so many times that it's kind of getting worn around the edges.
As it should be. I mean, it's something you should pass around.
Right, yeah. I do like to share, yeah.
Yeah. Do they come with instructions?
No, they don't come with instructions.
No little tag like my mattress. Okay.
Right,
I'm just
no.
curious. I, you know, I've never had an Olympic medal, so thank you for the insight there. All right. So when are you going to come back and visit Champaign?
Well, you know what? I try to get there a couple of times a year. I was actually down there for the first football game this year that Illinois won.
They won.
So,
huh?
Yeah. So, you know, I do. I still have a lot of great friends down there and try to get down there. But, you know, first and foremost kind of comes my kids. And if they have me run in one direction or one direction or another on a weekend, I got to kind of go with them. But like I said, I still enjoy what I will always call my hometown, Champaign-Urbana.
Bonnie Blair spoke with Illinois Public Media's Scott Cameron. She'll be representing the U.S. in closing ceremonies at the Winter Olympic Games February 23rd. We just heard Bonnie talk about being a role model for young skaters. Catherine Reuter, a two-time Olympic medalist, decided to pursue speed skating after Bonnie Blair came to speak at her high school, Centennial High in Champaign. Reuter talked with WYLL's Jeff Bossert.
I want to go back and talk about when you were a young child and first find out what made you so interested in speed skating.
Well, I learned how to skate when I was pretty young. I think I was on roller skates when I was a toddler, and my mom took me to like a mother-daughter ice skating class on campus at the U of I when I was maybe 4 or 5, and I think a parent from the speed skating group noticed me out there and noticed that I was not listening to any of the instructors and that I really just wanted to go fast. So they kind of pulled my parents aside and said, hey, you know, she might really enjoy speed skating. So after I finished off that figure skating class, I went over to speed skating, and I remember everybody telling me, all the coaches and other skaters, that I skated like a figure skater, and I did not know what that meant, but I knew that I wanted to skate like a speed skater. So I think that's what really kind of drew me in right away, and as the years went by, I just got more and more serious, and my other sports that I was involved in started to conflict with speed skating practices, and as that happened, the other sports went to the back burner, and speed skating always stayed front and center.
The ice arena that you used, weren't there some facilities that weren't available at a certain age that you'd had to go somewhere else to train?
Well, the facilities were always available. I just, as I got older, I started needing more training partners and more coaching, and so my parents started driving me down to St. Louis on the weekends so that I could train with a couple athletes there who were better than me, and they were boys, so they gave me somebody to chase, and then there were some coaches down there who were former Olympians and had just been involved in the sport for years and years and really got along well with my family and I, so we did a lot of training down in St. Louis.
Well, how did the experience of meeting Bonnie Blair influence your career?
So I always looked up to Bonnie Blair. I remember from a very young age that my dad had all the videos, my dad had recordings of all the old Olympics, and we would watch reruns of Bonnie Blair, Dan Jansen, Kathy Turner, and Amy Peterson. And so I always knew about those skaters and about the great accomplishments they made. I remember when I was in the third grade, I got chicken pox, and I would have to be in like the Epsom salt bath or whatever type of medicine bath you have to sit in when you have chicken pox, and to pass the time, I read the books written by Dan Jansen and Bonnie Blair. So from a very young age, they made a huge impact on what and who I knew about the athletic world. And then when I was 16, she actually came to Centennial High School and gave a speech for all the athletes at the school. And I wasn't involved in any school sports at the time, but one of the athletic director said, hey, you know, I know that you're a speed skater, and even though it's not a school sport, you should really come and sit in on this thing. And at the end of it, the athletic director, like, called me up to the stage, and I got to meet Bonnie Blair in person, and that was pretty cool. At that point, I had been accepted to train with the development team that was in Marquette, Michigan, but I was feeling really concerned about it because I was only a junior in high school and I was going to have to move away from home and finished my senior year training in Michigan, and I don't know, it just seemed like a really big and scary step. But after listening to her speech that day and listening to the things that she had to do in order to be good and how good she was already at my age, I felt like I was behind the eight ball, and I was 16, and if I wanted to be something by the time I was 18, I really needed to make that step and move away.
And we might be going back a bit here, but is there an age or a point or maybe one time out in the ice when you're like, I know I have the talent to do this and compete in the Olympics?
I remember when I was 12, I was actually skating inlines at the time, and I was at inline national championships. And I remember getting the feeling of, like, this is what I want to do. I want to be a professional speed skater. And people would ask me what I want to be when I grow up, and I'd say a speed skater. And at that nationals, my dad sat me down, and he's like, you know, it's really cute that you want to be a professional speed skater someday, but you need to make sure you have another plan. And I remember telling him, like, no way, Dad. I'm going to be a professional speed skater. I don't need another plan. And obviously, looking back, that was probably a silly thing for a 12-year-old to say. But I was just very fortunate that I ended up making that dream come true. On ice, I wouldn't say that moment, on ice or in inlines, I wouldn't say that moment ever really hit where I was like, oh, yeah, I could be really great at this and I could go to the Olympics. My whole journey was just a journey of getting stronger, learning more, becoming more technically sound, taking better care of my body. I mean, it was always just a journey. And I would find out on race day if I had worked hard enough to get there or not.
So run me through kind of the mental separation of leaving home and where you went to train and what that experience was like.
Leaving home at 16 was very difficult, both for me and for my family. I'm an only child, and so when, like, moving away at that age, I had never had any brothers or sisters to pick on me. And when you're a part of a team, a huge part of being on a team is that you pick on each other, and it's all in good fun. But I had really never been in a situation where I had to, like, toughen up to that type of thing. So just, I moved far away. I lived in college dorms as a high school student, and there was just a lot of teasing and playing around that happens on a team that not only was I really not used to that, but I was already, like, pretty upset of just having to leave my home and my family. That first year was actually really hard, but I definitely say that if I hadn't moved away the year that I did, I wouldn't have become the skater that I became.
How expensive is pursuing a career as a speed skater?
It's pretty expensive. You'll have to ask my parents just how much, but 18 was the first year that I qualified for any type of stipend, and that was $650 a month. And I lived out in Salt Lake. I had an apartment with a roommate, paid for my own food, gas, travel, everything. The only thing that was paid for was, like, facility use and coaches. I didn't have to pay for those things. So I still relied heavily on my parents helping me out. And honestly, I don't know and I don't want to know how much of a financial sacrifice they had to make for me. But I know that I'm very thankful for it.
Was the experience of going to the Olympics what you had hoped?
You know, looking back, I wish that I'd allowed myself to have more fun because I was very, very serious. I was very focused and committed to winning a medal. And the way that the speed skating schedule was, we skated about every 2 to 3 days. So we never had, I personally never had a big enough break between races to feel like I could let my guard down. While it was an amazing experience to represent the United States at the Olympics, like, hands down, it was everything I could have possibly dreamed that it would be. Obviously, I'm really happy with the results I came away with, but I think if there were any other young, aspiring Olympians out there, I would tell them to make sure that they're enjoying the moment, and you still can have fun and have new experiences and make new friends without being distracted from your goal.
When you're competing at that level, do the athletes typically hang out when you're not in competition?
Depends on the athletes and on the teams. I wouldn't really say that, like, direct competitors hang out, but I was always really good friends with the Dutch team, and they were actually fairly competitive. They've gotten more competitive over the years in the relay, but they're, like, individually I didn't have anybody who I was always, you know, fighting for first or second with. So a lot of those girls were my friends. The Korean and American men's team tended to spend some time together. But I think at the Olympics, even without going into other countries, I mean, all in the same building, you have USA hockey, USA figure skating, USA curling, I mean, USA biathlon, and I guess biathlon is actually out in Whistler, but still, it was kind of there's so many athletes to beat.
Through it all, what was the most stressful time? Was it training, or was it when you got to the Olympic level? Or
I guess I would say there's a point in the training cycle where you start to take the volume off and put the intensity on, and while your body starts to feel way better because you have a lot more energy and you can perform at a higher intensity, you also start to have more energy and time to think about how things are going. You know, when you're doing a crazy amount of laps at a tough pace for several hours every day, you don't have that much time to really think hard and judge yourself. You do whatever it takes to get through the workout. But then when it starts to get really close to competition time, tenths of a second matter. Little tiny misplacements of your feet when you're skating matter. And not only that, but then since you're not doing the extra hours and hours of training, the training is shorter because it's more intense. Now you have more time to think about your training. And that can get really stressful if you don't master the ability to say, like, well, I did the best I could for today, and that's it. And so when it's a good day, it's easy to say, like, oh, yeah, I did my best. Cool, I'm ready to get off. But when it's a not such a good day, it's easy to really sit there and stress over what needs to be better next time, or on the worst days, like, what if it never gets better? It can be quite stressful.
Tell me about how you got hurt in the injury you suffered. Explain maybe how that felt.
Well, I had some hip pain for maybe a full year leading up to the Olympics, and I had like this weird popping sensation in my right hip, and I never quite knew what it was. And it wasn't particularly painful. It was just a very weird, deep sensation, because it was like in the joint. So it wasn't like a muscle pain or a shooting stabbing pain. It was just like a very deep kind of discomfort. And then 2 or 3 months before the Olympics, maybe 3 months, we had a World Cup. We had an Olympic qualifier in Marquette, Michigan. Again, we were up there competing, and I fell and I hit the boards in such a way that just, I don't know what it was, but it was extremely painful. Like, don't think that I've ever been able to not finish a relay race before, but I hit the pads and I was screaming, and I got back into the middle of the ice and I just sat down, and my team had to finish the race without me. I never went to see the doctor. I don't know why I didn't see the doctor. I just figured that it would go away. And I had an athletic trainer who was helping me get through things and get back on the ice. But leading up to the Olympics and after the Olympics, my trainer started telling me, you know, probably what happened then is that you fell and tore a labrum in your hip. And the popping sensation got worse, and it became more and more painful to skate and to train and do all kinds of cross training. So after the Olympics, my trainer actually sat me down and was more or less like, yeah, actually, you're going to need surgery. I didn't want to tell you, but you need surgery to fix that. So I got the surgery, and I had a crazy fast and successful rehab, but I don't think I spent the amount of time necessary to, like, reset, like, my foundation.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, did doctors have a medical solution for this that would help you and allow you to train for Sochi, and you said, no, that's it, I want to retire?
Well, so after that, I got two more hip surgeries, and I was explaining, gosh, like, I've done this, I've done that, I've had this injection and this procedure and those surgeries, and I've done all these things, and I'm still in so much pain, doctor, and I just need you to tell me, like, do I really have a chance to make it to Sochi? And the docs basically said, yeah, you know, you can. Nope, it'll be fine. I know this procedure we can do. What we have to do is we have to go in and we'll start with a cortisone shot to make sure that we find the right area. But then once we find the right area, we'll go in, we'll burn off the nerve endings to that area, and then you'll be able to skate no problem. And I tried to think clearly and calmly about that. And when I felt like I'd thought about it for long enough, I decided that wasn't fixing anything. That was just burning off my sensation to the area. I was still going to have an injury. There was still going to be a problem there that I was probably making worse. I just wouldn't be able to feel it. And I asked this doctor, okay, say that I do that, and I come back, and I go to the Olympics, and everything's great. How long after the Olympics until I can expect to no longer be in pain? And this doctor said 3 to 5 years. And that's the point where I really decided that I was really happy with my career.
Did you slowly or immediately realize what you could be doing in terms of training other athletes, kind of like a pay it forward sort of thing?
I realized it very slowly. Being injured for that long helped me to kind of take the time to think about what I wanted to do next with my life, but coaching actually hadn't crossed my mind until there was a coaching job available and it was offered.
So what does your schedule consist of now as far as the training portion of, and how much can you do to practice with these athletes?
So I pretty much run a similar program to what I was in Marquette when I was still in high school. I'd say about half of my athletes are still in high school. They're all 20 or younger. It's like 16 to 19 is like my average. So we're at the rink. They have to get there about 6:15, but I'm always there by 6:30 to run the team dry land. And then we start pads at 7, and we skate from about 7:20 to 8:45. And then they go to school for the day, and they come back after school, and we train again from about 4 to 6:30.
One thing I wanted to ask you about the Olympics, with all this talk of potential terrorist activity in Sochi, I'm just wondering, when you went, wherever you went to compete, if it was somewhere overseas, if there was a safety protocol in place or something that you would immediately do if there was any kind of threat like that?
No, but that is a great question, because Junior Worlds are in Turkey this year, and I'm the Junior World team leader. So there will definitely have to be a meeting between the head coach and I about what that safety precaution is going to be.
And something not as serious, where do you keep your medals?
In a desk drawer. I don't keep them anywhere fancy. For a long time, I kept them in my purse because, I don't know, like people would just see me and be like, wow, I'd really like to see your medals. And they'd be like, oh, actually, they're right here. Hold on. But those are really, really heavy. So after a little while, and I'm not talking a super long while, like maybe 6 months or so after the Olympics, I started keeping them at the house, and now they just sit in one of my desk drawers.
Catherine Reuter took silver in the 1,000-meter skate and bronze in a 3,000-meter relay in Vancouver in 2010. She spoke with Illinois Public Media's Jeff Bossert. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, Jeff talks with former Olympic figure skater and Peoria native Matt Savoy. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WILL. Welcome back to Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows. The Winter Olympics are underway in Sochi, and we're hearing from former Olympic skaters who hail from central Illinois. Peoria native Matt Savoy is an attorney with a Boston law firm, but before that, he was a figure skater who competed in the 2006 Olympics in Turin, Italy. He talked with Jeff Bossert about how he got started as a skater.
I was about 9 when I started sort of taking private lessons and competing in the sport. My parents, I think, took me to the rink for the first time when I was about 5. And they put my sister and me in all sorts of park district classes, some of which were skating. They put us in gymnastics classes. I think the thing that I liked most about skating was that it combined artistry and athleticism. And it was something that I really liked, but I don't think I really found in any other activity that I had done up until that time.
It was Peoria a pretty good environment for that? Did you have the facilities you needed to excel at it?
Oh, Yeah, Peoria was great. I mean, I think back about the way I was able to train there, and everything I needed was at my fingertips. And of course, it helped to have really supportive parents who were willing to, you know, drive me to practice and pick me up at school. But I think it was easier in Peoria than it might have been if I'd grown up someplace else.
Did you have heroes growing up that you watched in the Olympics or at the other competitions?
Yeah, I think when I was sort of most aware of skating growing up in the sport, I think Todd Eldridge was probably someone I looked up to a lot. And I ended up competing against him just as he was leaving the sport. But, you know, I still looked up to him even then.
So let's talk about some of the skills that that you acquired. I want to get an idea of training, and having watched it for years in the Olympics, I mean, how long does it take to learn to do the jumps? I assume there's a lot of practice there that isn't even, it's before you're even on the ice.
Yeah, it varies. You know, and it varies depending on the jump you're learning. And I think the jump that frustrated me the most was learning a triple jump for the first time. And you go through periods where, you know, you're working on it and you're working on it and you don't ever think you're ever going to land it. And then one day you do. And, you know, that's gratifying. And then in my experience, once you've learned sort of one level of jump, like a triple jump, the rest of the triples come easier because, you know, your body has a better sense of the timing that you should be getting. But, you know, it took me, I want to say, about 9 years to feel like, you know, to reach a technical level that was pretty much my peak technical level for the rest of my career. So it's definitely a sport that involves a lot of skill and a lot of repetition.
What's the most difficult one?
Well, the most difficult jump people are doing today, I think, is technically, well, the most difficult jump anyone has landed is a quadruple Lutz. And there are very few skaters that attempt that. I'm not sure if anybody will actually be attempting one at the Olympics. I think the most difficult jump that will probably be attempted at the Olympics is a quadruple Saukow, but both of those jumps are four revolution jumps.
And what was the hardest one, I mean, that you were able to master?
I never landed a quadruple jump in competition. I would work on them in practice and occasionally land them, but it was something that always eluded me. But I don't really have any regrets about not having landed one. You know, over time, they take a lot of wear and tear on your body, and I was glad that I was able to use the last couple of years in the sport to focusing on developing as a performer more than a jumper.
What was your favorite performance, be it in U.S. championships or Olympics or anywhere else?
My favorite performance was probably my long program in the Olympics in Torino. It was the best I think I'd ever really skated, even though there were still definitely mistakes in the program. And it was the highest profile event I'd ever skated in. But it also felt rewarding from a performance standpoint. Even if I might have skated technically better in some situations, I felt like I was presenting a better picture of myself as a performer. And that felt better to me. And I think that's a performance I'm really proud of.
I wonder if you had any thought process behind the music you used. One that I just watched was the U.S. Nationals in, I think, 2005, using Barber's Adagio for strings. And you seem kind of like more of a dancer, maybe, than some figure skaters I've watched.
That's another one of my, I guess, favorite performances. And I kept that program a while because it felt so good to perform it well. I wanted to keep doing that. Unfortunately, I never really did that again, at least in a way that was satisfying to me. But picking music for programs is difficult. After, you know, the last several years in my career, I ended up letting pretty much my choreographer steer me in whatever direction he felt best, mostly because he knew, I think, the strengths in my skating style, and he also had a really great musical vocabulary, much better than I had. So he was able to think about, you know, different options for music and also different ways of piecing music together. The Adagio for Strings program, you know, I didn't even really recognize at the time, but I think my choreographer adjusted the music and edited it in a way that was, you know, pretty different from how it actually sounds, you know, if a orchestra were to perform it. But it worked really well for skating, and I enjoyed skating to it.
Well, you talked about knowing when you would compete the last time. Why did you decide to retire?
I had decided I wanted to go to law school before I entered my last year of competition. I was actually admitted to, so I went to University of Illinois for 2 years between 2003 and 2005, and studying urban planning at the Graduate School of Urban Planning there. And in my last year in graduate school, I applied to law school, and I was accepted to Cornell. And Cornell was generous enough to let me defer for 1 year. So otherwise, I would have had to start law school during the year that I would have been qualifying for the Olympics. So it was good to have that year off just to focus almost exclusively on skating. And I was really happy with the results. I mean, I would have been happy either way, I think, but it was good to get 1 year to focus on a sport I really loved and knew I wasn't going to be able to participate in anymore, but then also that I had this next phase of my life to look forward to.
Yeah, you were always on a career path. I mean, you got your political science degree in, 2002 at Bradley, and knew that skating was something, I don't want to just call it a hobby, I don't want to belittle it, but you knew you had something else to do once that was a phase of your life that you couldn't focus on anymore.
Yeah. And it was important to me as a way of staying psychologically healthy, I think, during that time. I liked having different things to focus on. And training really only took about 4 to 5 hours of my day. So then you have a lot of other time to focus on other things. Again, another reason why training in Central Illinois was great. I went to Bradley University, which is where my mom had worked. I was really familiar with the university, and it was really close to my training center, and also had a lot of great professors and programs to choose from. So I was able to go to school full-time and train. That's something I know a lot of people aren't able to do. So I'm really grateful that I was able to have that opportunity. I wanted to be able to study and think about what I wanted to do after competing, but I also wanted to obviously still skate and as long as I could.
Yeah, it sounds like you stayed with it as long as you could stay healthy and do it. Was there a point where you considered quitting any earlier?
Sure. I think so when I applied to law school, that was the 2004-2005 season. And toward the end of that season, I was wondering whether I would want to compete, knowing that the next year was an Olympic year. I wasn't, just at that time, wasn't feeling strongly attached and didn't think my chances were that great of making the Olympic team. But after talking with my family and my coaches and other people on the sport, I realized that there really wasn't any reason to rush off to school and that it'd be worth it to give it one last shot.
There's been a lot of controversy this year regarding Russia's policies when it comes to gay citizens, and you did some skating there. And you, a gay man, and you married your partner in October last year. I just wondered what you felt about the policy when you were competing there, and did you feel pressure to keep that to yourself for some time during your career?
Sure. So I was not out when I was competing, and I think for that reason, my experience is totally different than what it would be if I were competing now. I also think the environment was probably a little different as well. I don't know a lot about the situation. I don't really know how the law is going to be applied, although it does seem scary for LGBT citizens, for spectators and athletes. And when I was competing, I never had any of those sorts of fears, either because I was not an out athlete or they just weren't as prominent, and I just wasn't attuned to what the difficulties were for LGBT people in Russia. But, you know, certainly I hope that when the games happen and then after the games, that people can be treated with equal dignity and respect, whether they're athletes, coaches, or their families, and the citizens of the country itself.
That begs another question. I'm just wondering, when you went to Russia or wherever else, was there ever a safety protocol in place? Like, if there were some sudden news of something dangerous happening, if you knew, you know, how to respond or where to go?
Unfortunately, if there was, I did not know.
Okay.
Though the one thing I will say is that at the Olympics, there's always been security, certainly since the events with Nancy Kerrigan and at the 1994 Nationals. I think U.S. figure skating had bumped up its security at just domestic events. But once you get to the Olympics, the level of security at that event is even more extreme and certainly noticeable. It makes you feel good when you're there, even though it's very different. It's reassuring to know that people are paying attention to those sorts of things.
Do you still get the skate?
Not as much as I wish. I think when I started working as a lawyer, I was prepared for the idea that my career would be, you know, the main focus of my life, or one of the main focuses of my life, but hadn't really thought about how hard it really is for people to sort of just maintain a daily exercise routine. And that's something I admittedly still struggle with. It's much easier to stay fit when it's your job. I have to hand it to people that can get to the gym or get to the rink more often. And I certainly wish I could.
That's Matt Savoy, who finished 7th in men's single figure skating at the 2006 Winter Olympics in Turin, Italy. I'm Jim Meadows, and it's been years since I put on a pair of skates for anything. But listening to these three Olympians makes me feel like going back on the ice myself, although at a very sedate pace. Focus is produced by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft is our technical director. Ryan Weber is our intern. You can always find free downloadable podcasts of our show on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. This is Focus on WILL.